He is Robin Leach. He is Jada Markin. This is Car Keys.
It is indeed, and I'd like to start off this week's show with a comment about tires, because I have recently been involved in buying tires for a couple of vehicles, and there's an interesting, I didn't read an article, but I saw a headline saying, before I get into the real part of the tires, that airless tires may be available for cars by 2024. I don't know whether you've read anything or seen this headline or not. All I can think of is things like hard rubber tires on wagons and plastic tires on garden, you know, gardening sort of things and that kind of thing. I can't imagine airless tires on cars or vehicles, for that matter, by any year for a couple of reasons. Mostly, the comfort situation, which I cannot imagine occurring with airless tires that would also give a fairly good mileage durability. I know nothing about it, so the listeners don't need to get all excited, except that, Jay, you might get excited. I recently bought four new Goodyear Assurance tires for my Hyundai because the Michelins were apparently declared to be somewhat defective in manufacturing, and I had a failure with one of them. So instead of just replacing that particular tire, I was told that I would get a great credit against purchasing brand-new tires, and I did. I got great credit, and it doesn't matter what they cost, except that the Goodyear Assurance tires and the Michelin tires before them both had amazing mileage guarantees. The Michelins were 90,000 miles, and the Goodyears that I have on are 80,000, I think, or maybe a little more. What I have noticed, both with the Michelins and more so with the Goodyears, is a much harsher ride on the pavement. When you hit cracks in the asphalt pavements or any imperfection in the surface. I am attributing this to the fact that in order to have tires go 80 to 90,000 miles with tread wear, they have to be fairly rigid rubber compounds. If you know more, Jay, you can jump in. I'm not sure I'm happy with the ride on the Goodyear Assurance tires, which gets to the point of when you go out and buy tires, and Jay, you did it for your VW,
you, I've done it a bunch of times.
You research them, and I think you like the tires you put on your car, but there's definitely a different ride quality between tires these days, manufacturers and or rubber compounds, mileage warranties, and the like. And I would guess that the longer the mileage warranty, the harsher the harder the compound might be in tires just to get them to wear that much longer. So now this airless tire article popped up, which was not much of an article. It was just a
memo. Let me chime in on the tire purchase process, if I may.
Go.
So I purchased tires for my daughter, actually, just recently, to put on her Subaru Impreza. And so my approach to buying tires, which I think are probably the most critical part of a car, because that is what connects the car to the road, is always the same. I will start, and this is not a free advertising thing, but you go to TireRack.com, and I don't necessarily buy the tires from Tire Rack, but they have an extremely well developed website and review system and testing of all the tires that are on the market, and they will not only rate the tires, so they're independently rated. You know, apart from other organizations or the manufacturer.
It is a great organization. I echo that.
They test the tires. They tell you, you know, and it's pretty simple to navigate the site and figure out what tires you need for your car and what your options are. And what's very what I find the most interesting is then go to customer reviews. And customers will have, you know, will give you input and will compare one tire to another and then actually rate the tires on things such as comfort, longevity, you know, how they handle in the rain, how they handle in the snow, how they handle, you know, on dry pavement. And I will always say, if you're only going to have one set of tires, or even if you're having, you know, separate tires for winter driving, the most it is more critical, it is more important to look at the tires' performance in the wet as opposed to dry. On dry pavement.
Yes.
Any tire will hold a car on the road on dry pavement in normal conditions. Where it gets tricky is when you know the road surface gets wet or in winter driving.
Okay, let's go to the Impreza tire you chose.
Well, I you know the last few tires I've been driving, and Robin, you know this. I really have a soft spot for these Vredestein tires, which are not very well known here in the U.S., but they're a great tire. This is the third car I actually put them on, and they work really, really well. They're comfortable. I have not gone any, you know, I haven't done any 50, 60,000 miles on any one of these sets of tires, but the reviews I've read lead me to believe that they will go a certain, you know, they have pretty good longevity. They're comfortable. They handle wet in the they handle well in the wet, and I have those tires on my VW, which I drive, you know, in the snow, and they're unbelievably they perform really well in the snow, even though they're all season tires.
So for the Impreza, you chose.
And then the final note is again, you can go and talk to your local shops. Because, interestingly, a lot of these little local shops around here actually source their tires from vendors that have that share the same warehouses as Tire Rack. And surprisingly, when it's all said and done, the price I pay to have four tires put on the car at a local, you know, small shop and supporting small business, the final cost is within, you know, less than $50 more than I would buying the tires from Tire Rack, if that.
Yeah.
So, it you know, it is certainly, you know, again, I use them as a source, and then I end up sourcing the tires elsewhere oftentimes. But that's my story.
Okay, no, but I want to know what you chose for the Impreza brand.
Vredestein.
Okay, so you did the same thing for your daughter.
Yeah.
Now, let's continue, because it's sort of an interesting topic for, I hope, some listeners. My Jeep Cherokees, two that I have, came standard with 17-inch Firestone destinations. I got amazingly good wear with the original
great tire.
And the comfort level, which I didn't realize how good it was until I sourced another alternative brand when I had replaced the first set of Firestones. Was wonderful. I found them handling well. They seemed to be good in wet. They were not particularly a great compound for, let's say, a heavy, snowy winter situation, but most all-season tires are not particularly great for specific winter weather because they're made for all season. But I replaced a set of destinations on one of my Jeeps with a more aggressive winter tread compound, and I can't even think of the brand that's on there right now, but the harshness level went up. The snow the snow ability situation went up. They are not as good in just the dry was not as comfortable as the Firestones are. Wear is yet to be determined. But then I went to the Goodyears over the Michelins on the Hyundai, and I've started to realize that, yes, there is indeed quite a difference in terms of comfortability aspects of tires, not to mention the functionality of the tires.
Can I add one final note on this tire subject? I think, you know, a lot of people think you're comparing one brand to another. I just want to remind people that the same brand of tire, whether it is Firestone, Goodyear, BF Goodrich,
Michelin,
Bridgestone, have numerous different models of tires.
Correct.
That will fit one particular car. And some of these brands have cheap tires. Some are originally mounted tires that are not so great. And when you replace your tires, it's not just looking at the brand, it's looking at the different models, and it really comes down to looking at the specs.
Yes.
And one of the reasons I go with these Radistines is because they don't always rank number one, but they'll always rank like top five of out of 50 different tires. And price wise, they're unbeatable. And we all know that, replacing four tires on a car that has 17, 18, 19, 20-inch sizes, on the tires, can be horrendously expensive.
Well,
it's just worth doing the research.
Well, I think the research is to our listeners, if they are well aware of it, should do something like you did, which is read all the reviews, which you can get centrally at Tire Rack. And this is not a promotion of Tire Rack, but it is a source for getting excellent knowledge base for tires. If you're in that situation where you want to replace tires, you want to know what you might want to buy next. But back to the beginning of this segment, which was, are airless tires realistic, Jay? What do you know about
it? I have no idea.
Yeah.
I'm sure they won't be wheelbarrow tires if they do ever come out.
But I
have nothing on the subject.
Well, it may not go very far. I have not seen any follow-up to that by one particular headline, and we'll just have to wait and see, but I thought I'd bring it up for the listeners. But let's segue into the Bricklin, which is the garage find. And I'm about to buy four new tires, BF Goodrich in this case, from a Walmart of all cases, because I've been told that's where I can find the tires that will most likely closely match what the OE, that's original equipment, tires were on the Bricklin, which I bought back in 1974. And it is down at a body shop undergoing renovation. And I have a picture of the initial renovation situation, and it actually looks absolutely sensational. But two of the tires have failed, and the other two, which are holding air, are back way back to 2000, roughly the year 2000, when the car was last renovated. And Walmart, of all places, seems to be a tire center. You can get tires for old cars, Mustangs or whatever. You can find the sizes that fit at Walmart. And so I do not know how these BF Goodrich tires will ride compared to the original equipment, because I can't even remember how the car rode in the original situation. But we'll see what happens. I'm going to try to go down and look at the car. Malcolm Bricklin, who was the original creator of this car, is still alive and living in Florida. And the place where my vehicle is sitting right now is undergoing restoration of sorts. Is trying to get Malcolm Bricklin to come up from Florida in the spring and have an interview with this car on the floor to reminisce about the car for whatever publicity this place, which is renovating it, wants to get. So that's that on a barn find, which was found in my garage or my barn here in Sharon, Connecticut, about a month and a half ago, and it got dragged out, loaded onto a carrier, and has disappeared for a couple of months until it comes back to me.
Who does the work on it?
Who does the work on it?
Yeah, I mean, obviously there are outfits that are picked for this sort of thing. I was just curious if there's a...
I do not know exactly. Speed Sport Tuning may be the place, but I haven't been to the place yet. I don't even know how to find it. It's down in Danbury somewhere. And it was discovered because of a mutual friend, Jay knows him, and of Jay's and mine, knew I had this Bricklin and got talking with a friend of his, and it's all about contacts and connections and who knows what. And they called me up and asked if I'd like to donate my car for a certain amount of renovation. It is not going to be running because the engine was not running, and they're not an engine plant. So I don't know what I'm going to do about the car when it comes back to me.
Can someone
All it means is money. That's all.
Hey, Robin.
Yes.
As we transition to the next subject, I have a great idea for your Bricklin. You know that a lot of old collectible vehicles, like VW buses and some Porsches, and I'm trying to think of other cars that recently I have seen being converted to electric power plants. I think you should go and get an electric motor installed in your Bricklin.
Okay,
that would be the best way to
I don't think my listeners want to know about that, and I don't either right now, but what I want to ask you is that maybe I should donate to Mecum Auctions, because I've been watching Mecum Auctions recently, and it's been amazing what kind of prices are. I don't think the Bricklin's got the same cachet as the, these wonderful old Dodges and Plymouths and Thunderbirds and Fairlanes and all that that I've been seeing going down the runway at Mecum Auctions on TV recently. But I've got to figure a way to sell it at some point. And
I'm sure you will.
I'm sure I will. Okay, Jay, you take over.
Well, I've been drinking the electric car Kool-Aid for some time now,
though
I haven't bought one. Friends are looking at me a little funny, like I'm really a true believer, and I think it's fascinating to see the industry now starting to try to play catch-up with the likes of Tesla.
The American industry.
And, you know, again, the State of the Union there is the following. I think GM is in a good position now. They're going to come out with those two new Bolts and a few models within the Cadillac brand. Other manufacturers are coming out with great product. I think that one of the coolest cars I've seen in picture is the new Hyundai Ioniq 5. I think it'll come out in other parts of the world before it gets here. It's kind of a crossover wagon, little SUV, actually not that little, all-wheel drive, dual motor, electric car or
vehicle. The Ioniq 5, is that what we're talking about?
Yeah. I think it's the design is striking, both on the outside and the inside, and it's going to be right up there as far as specs with, probably between 250 and 300 miles of range, which is, as we know, the only thing that really matters to people.
Range is going to continue to increase, too, as battery development accrues, think. And part of it's based on the size, and therefore the smaller the car, the smaller the battery packs. They have to limit the size of the battery packs to power them. But you're right, 250 to 300 miles is a very important area of satisfaction.
So we're getting to a number of electric vehicles that are going to be available between the Volkswagen ID.4, the Ioniq 5, the little Bolt SUV, which unfortunately, at least initially, will only be a two-wheel drive, front drive. All those vehicles are going to retail somewhere in the $40,000 to $45,000 range.
Yeah.
And, seems like a lot of money.
Breaks.
But yes, there is also, a new bill, about to get on the floor. I guess it's not there yet. That would give manufacturers, even the GMs and the Teslas who've run out of these tax credits. And I think we've talked about it, but people will be eligible for a certain period of time for another $7,000 tax credit. So, your $45,000 car is now a $38,000 car, and you're looking at prices that are the same as, small crossovers, whether it's, Honda CRVs, Subaru.
And it brings
back.
It down to what the average price of a car is currently at, which is mid-30s.
Correct. 37, 38, and climbing.
For any kind of vehicle, propulsion vehicle.
I think it's interesting to see what's going to happen. I think I saw a Polestar yesterday, and I know not very many people are aware what the Polestar is. It's a Volvo sub-brand, and there's a Polestar 1, which I believe is a hybrid vehicle they're going to end production of it pretty soon. And then the Polestar 2 is a fully electric vehicle. And for some reason, I'm pretty sure I saw one last night in the dark. Very few places where you can buy them right now, so I'm a little skeptical as to how fast they will get to market. But
yeah, Volvo's going to try and increase dealerships in that situation because there are not very many dealers around that actually can sell the Polestars. However, apparently Volvo dealers, and that probably will not mean 100% of the existing Volvo car dealers, non-Polestar brands, are supposed to be able to theoretically service the Polestars.
Yeah,
I don't know whether they're... I think, don't we agree that electric cars are more simple to service than non-electric cars as far as theoretical
yeah,
needs
course.
For mechanics?
Yep.
Swapping out electric motors, for example, and you don't have transmissions, you don't have oil-bound fossil-fueled engines, so you don't have to do all that stuff. But to the electric car situation, let's keep you on the electric car situation. Here's the next thing that's coming that I didn't know existed already, but apparently it does, and that's bi-directional EV charging situations.
Exactly.
And it's related to a headline that says bi-directional EVs could lend a hand in power crisis. And we go down to Dallas where they lost power. I cannot imagine a situation if the power is down somewhere, anywhere in the world, and somebody says, let's go plug your EV into the grid and send some power back to help it, that anybody would want to do that because you would not have power to drive your car out of the driveway if you did that. But they've got a whole article in the Automotive News this week about how bi-directional EVs could lend a hand in power crises, with the idea that you plug your charged, presumably by that time, electric vehicle into the grid and send power from how many you need to send power from, I don't know, back into the grid to help stabilize power surges or whatever else they're claiming that bidirectional charging equipment in these cars might help the national grid situation. To me, it's a fantasy idea.
All right, and in the final minute?
Mud season. Has anybody driven on the dirt roads around our tri-state area?
Oh, boy, I have, yes. And mud season is a very difficult season for the towns for maintenance. And certainly, depending on where the mud season has already hit, there's a variety of sort of like hard versus soft tires. There's a variety of sort of underlayment in these dirt roads, which affects very definitely the depth of the mud situation that you can run into. And you could conceivably, certainly with two-wheel drive cars, possibly get stuck.
Stuck, absolutely. With a two-wheel drive, you for sure will get stuck on some of these public roads. And four-wheel drives are going to bottom out, so try to stay away from them. It's also, we're in a season where temperatures are above freezing during the day, below freezing at night. Watch out for black ice. I experienced that over the weekend. This is when it could be.
I'll have one final add to that, Jay. I parked a Jeep on a sloping driveway, and it froze, and the Jeep actually slid 6 feet in park, with the transmission in park on this driveway from where it had been parked the night before when it was wet till the next morning when I came out to get it, and I couldn't believe it. But it is
okay.
All
that's
right.
Funny, but it's scary, right? So
yeah.
Careful out there.
He is Robin Leach. He is Jada Markin. This is Car Keys.
Baby, you can drive my car. Yes, I'm going.